Hello there. I am the Projectionist, and welcome to my sinister Tales of Terror. Hello, dear listeners. Thank you for accepting my invitation to join me down here in the vault to hear another offering from my sinister Tales of Terror. You got here just in time. It sounds like the storm is almost upon us, eh? Now, let me just lower the lights and secure that door, of course. There. Would you like to hold the candle? Now then, I believe we have set the mood for our little gathering. But what story should I pick from my Tome of Terror? This one? No. Too gory. How about... No, you wouldn't be able to sleep after that one. Ah, here we go. I call this one, Please Come Over. Glimtrip was your average 13-year-old boy. His greatest joy in his young life was spending time with four other young boys his age, a close-knit group of friends, affectionately called the Boys, that he had been fortunate enough to have grown up with in Haddonfield. The Drip family lived on the corner of Hawthorne Avenue and Grove Street, where the rest of Glenn's friends lived a couple of miles away, in a quiet suburban community on Hillside Lane. Glenn and his five bosom companions did everything together. Every moment after school and on the weekends was spent in each other's company, riding their bikes to and fro, visiting Dr. Fantasy's comic shop, checking out the latest games for their PlayStation 2, or seeing the latest horror movie, unbeknownst to their parents, of course, at the local Cineplex. The boys' parents were just as close to each other as their children, and many a Saturday evening was spent at one of their houses, enjoying barbecues and celebrating birthdays, or just chatting over coffee and cake. As these things happen amongst the boys, while they were loyal to one another to a fault, Glenn found his best friend in the whole world to be Pete Behringer. Pete's parents and Glenn's remarked the two boys were like yin and yang to each other. Glenn was dark-haired and filled to the brim with mischief, where Pete was sandy-haired and eager to help anyone, even a complete stranger if the need arose. If there was anything in Glenn's life that gave him grief, it was his older sister, Janice. The young woman had a tendency to talk to her many friends for hours and hours at a time, not to mention the marathon conversations with her boyfriend, Tyler. Glenn and Pete tried to wind up every evening by chatting online through their computers. When Janice wasn't hogging up the phone line, that is. As the two boys typed out their responses to each other, sharing what the current storyline was in the latest issue of Punisher and the Batman comic books, Pete shared some rather disturbing news. One night, his father had been laid off from his job of 20 years. Apparently, that evening for the Behringers, it had been rather uncomfortable. his father skipping dinner to drink himself into a slumber in the living room while watching Northern Exposure. Pete had even overheard his mother crying while talking on the telephone to her sister that she feared they might have to move away. Reading this upon his monitor, an icy chill gripped Glenn's heart. Wasn't Pete like a brother? He couldn't fathom not seeing him every day as he and the other boys rode their bikes to and from school and around their neighborhoods, cutting wires and finding adventures that only the young can locate so effortlessly. As the two friends bid each other a good evening, it was Glenn who turned in with a heavy heart. The next morning, Glenn shared the news with his family at the breakfast table. His mother and father were almost as alarmed as he had been the night before, rapidly discussing with each other the possibility of finding Pete's father work at their own places of business. Glenn felt excited about sharing such a possibility with Pete, and after hurriedly devouring his breakfast, he was out the door and on his bicycle, pedaling as fast as he could to meet up with the boys at their usual morning spot, a 7-Eleven near Hillside Lane, while the other three lads that made up the boys were there, poring over the latest issue of Game Pro. Pete was not. While the other three eventually left for school, Glenn stayed until almost the ringing of the first bell, rapidly pedaling his bicycle before he was counted as tardy. Many things raced through Glenn's mind as he took his seat in class. Perhaps Pete had come down with something, or he might have been feeling even worse than he let on the previous evening, and somehow convinced his parents to let him stay home for the day. School seemed to drag on, torturously for Glenn, without Pete's company. He begged off, joining the other boys after school, and headed home, fortunately managing to beat Janice home, so he was able to have access to his email on the computer. There was nothing from Pete, though. Glenn was about to log off and call the Behringer residence when he received a notification.
You've got mail.
Opening up the electronic mail revealed it to be from Pete. The message, however, simply stated, "Please come over." That was an odd message, the boy thought. Glenn hastily typed up a reply, asking if everything was okay. Long moments passed.
You've got mail.
Once again, Glenn opened up his electronic message, and as before, Pete's reply stated, "Please come over." The young boy responded that he was getting a little worried. Why wouldn't Pete tell him what was wrong? Almost 15 minutes passed by, and Glenn was ready to shut down his computer now and call Pete's house.
You've got mail.
Glenn opened up the message and read the text. "Please come over now." That was the last straw. Glenn shut off his computer and ran downstairs and out the front door. Hopping upon his bicycle, he pedaled over to Pete's home as quick as he could. It wasn't panic that Glenn was feeling, but it bordered on it. Surely, his friend's father hadn't done something. He remembered at school hearing about a fellow student's mother hurting her daughter. She had had too much to drink and began to rough up her child. But Mr. Behringer, he never would do that, eh? The young boy turned on Hillside Lane, jumping the curb and letting his bicycle fall to the grass, even though his mother constantly reminded him to use the kickstand. He raced up the steps, two at a time, to Pete's front door. From within the house, he could hear the TV blaring loudly. It sounded like a daytime soap opera. He knocked on the door, but there was no answer. The young boy reasoned that perhaps whoever was watching the television might not have heard his knocking. So he balled his fist and pounded on the door. Still, there was no response. Biting his lip, Glenn tried the doorknob and was amazed to find the front door was unlocked.
Can I put the mall behind bars, pretty please?
Hello! The young boy called. There was no answer, but the television was so loud that Glenn doubted anyone could have heard the front door being kicked in. So, switching the television off, the young boy called out loudly again, "Hello!" No response. It was then that Glenn noticed the smell. Odd, and most definitely off-putting. "Pete!" the young boy cried out as he moved past the recliner and sofa in the living room to enter the kitchen. There was still no response. As he entered the kitchen, the young boy stopped in his tracks. It was quite a mess. Cabinets and drawers open, food partially eaten and strewn about. There was even what looked like jam spilt on the kitchen counter and stove. It was then that Glenn noticed the handprints, the smears on the wall and counters, the streaks of jam. But the young boy's mind was already telling him the truth of what that dark red substance really was. Numbly, Glenn followed a pair of streaks across the floor, which led up the stairs to the second floor. As the young boy reached the second landing, he found the smell was strongest up here, as well as noticing Pete and his parents' bedroom doors were left wide open. With trembling steps, he forced himself down the hallway, one foot in front of the other. And when he had reached Pete's room, he glanced in. His eyes went wide and a scream burst from his throat. There, at the computer desk, sat Pete. Glenn knew it was him because he was wearing the shirt he had at school the day before. But when the young boy had last seen his best friend, he had had two arms and a head. Glenn ran down the stairs. The young boy all but flew down them and burst out the front door. He made it to the end of the Behringer's driveway before he collapsed and began to sob uncontrollably. It was there that mere moments later, the other three members of the boys found him as they rode up the street on their bicycles, coming back from renting a video game from O'Brien's, the nearby video store. While Glenn couldn't calm himself long enough to explain what was wrong, one of his friends bolted off to get their parents. The sight of the young boy curled up in the driveway now, holding onto his friends, was enough for them to call 911 immediately. It was the paramedics that were able to help Glenn calm down enough to talk with them and the rest of the boys with their concerned parents. It was the police officers, though, that found Pete's parents. They, too, had been savaged, their bodies located, stacked upon one another in their own bedroom. They also found some odd-shaped tracks throughout the house, and not one of the investigators could say what had made them. The bipedal prints led to the open window of Pete's parents' bedroom. With the time of death for the Behringer family being determined after the forensics investigators had plied their craft, having occurred early in the previous evening, Glenn overheard this just as his own parents and sister showed up to comfort their family member. The one thought that echoed in his head, though, over and over and over, was who had sent the emails. was that story? You might be glad to know that even with the tragic loss of Pete, Glenn and the surviving boys stayed the closest of friends. That is, until in college, when Glenn learned that... But that is another tale for another time, eh? Please come over. Was submitted to us by one Aaron Costas of Overland Park in Kansas City. For the record, when a story is sent to us, we edit it a little, sometimes expanding on the tale, and sometimes removing things that wouldn't sit well with our listening audience. So please remember, if you too have a tale of fear and frights, and would like for me to share it on the air, you may contact me on the Facebooks. Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. I will admit that I rarely check in on a day-to-day basis, but I will get your electronic missives. I am still being informed that my radio show will be made available on iTunes and Stitcher in the near future. So listeners, I hope to see those grimaces, I mean your smiling faces, once again, here, next week, at the same time, for more of my sinister tales of terror. This has been a RetroWest production. Sleep well, and goodbye.